Good morning, members. I call the meeting to order. We will announce when we have a quorum. I just want to give you the schedule for the next couple of weeks. Today, we're going to work on a bill for the Waters money. If you all recall that last year, when we did the our budget bill, we set aside $5 million for groundwater and asked the PCA to come up with a plan for spending the dollars, and said that you could not spend the dollars until the legislature approved the plan. Unfortunately, the plan didn't have any outcomes in it, and the rule or the law governing the clean water money says that you have to have outcomes. So we are going to be looking at some alternatives for that money, concentrating again on groundwater. However, there's also some of the clean water funding left on the bottom line, and so we're going to work on a clean water bill, which of course has to go to Representative Murphy's committee. So we will prepare a bill for her committee. That's one thing we're going to do. Then we're going to have an omnibus finance bill. I don't think it will be very tight. Obviously, we don't have any money, but where people have made proposals like the one you heard from Representative Saylor, and there might be some reducing spending too. So we will consider those in an omnibus bill. I met with Senator Anderson, and what we have decided is the vehicle is going to be a bill that she and I will carry. It will be introduced today, and it is meeting some of the legislative auditor's concerns about the DNR, specifically saying that they need plans, long-term budget plans for their divisions, just like Parks and Trails has long-term finance plans. So this bill will essentially is mimicking the language that we used to get the Parks and Trails plan, and that bill will be introduced today in the House. And that will be the vehicle that we will use for our omnibus finance bill. So we will start working on that, I expect, on Thursday. And on Thursday, one of the bills we are going to start with Maury Lanning's bill that has come through policy, talking about watersheds and how watersheds should or should not be created, and he has a proposal that we're going to hear. It will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. But the issues that Representative Lanning brings up are important issues for us to discuss as a committee, and that's what I want us to do on Thursday. The other thing I wanted to announce before we started is today at 2:45, the K-12 committee has invited us to their committee, and it's in room 10. They'll be talking about school trust lands. They are anxious, and I will underline the word anxious, to move forward with changing the way school trust funds are managed and how the money from school trust funds would go to school. That is our jurisdiction, so any bill that does that will come to this committee and will be heard in this committee. But I just wanted to give you kind of a lay of the land for the next couple of weeks. So with that, we do have a quorum, and we will start with House File 3253, Representative Purcell. each of these bills is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in a water bill, and that will be the bill going to Representative Murphy's committee. All you see, the clean water creates money. Representative Peck.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And if you're putting this finance, this water finance bill together, if we have some bills and some ideas, I know that we do have an amendment to it. We weren't aware that this was going to take place, that you're putting a water finance bill together. Should we draft a bill, or would you prefer to look at the amendment that we have today, or how would you like to deal with that? If we have some ideas that we want to include.
Let's just talk about it. You don't have to draft a bill. If you have an amendment, or you have it in written form.
Yeah.
Then let's just discuss it as if it were a bill.
Okay.
Would you want to do that way?
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
We will put that on the agenda for today.
All right.
We will treat it in the same respect. We will lay it over for possible inclusion. That would be the, if that works. Why? Get to go through the bill drafting process if you have.
Thank you.
All right. Though we do have to give notice to the public, and that's the reason we have bill numbers. I think we'll notice it for Thursday. Okay. We're fine. All right. Welcome to the committee, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 3253 for possible inclusion. And just briefly to the bill, this Star Lake Board, as you can see in the bill itself, was established, I believe that was 2007, and the statutes are there. What this bill is endeavoring to accomplish is provide funding for this Star Lake Board and the Pollution Control Agency, and a little bit more particular language to move this this pilot project toward some outcomes that we believe are better than the previous language that was in the bill, and particularly if I may read a couple of lines here on 1.10, we're going to focus on citizen partnerships with Pollution Control Agency to develop and implement pollution prevention lake and watershed management plans, and designating said waters as star lakes and rivers. And this is just a movement forward, and I've done quite a bit of work with lake associations in my several decades and doing this kind of stuff, and we're just trying to move beyond a trophic state index type of designation to actually having a management plan where we can try and keep these lakes in a reasonable trophic state for their beneficial productivity. So I'd entertain any questions.
See any questions right now? We do have someone who would like to testify. Shannon Lockhammer from the Pollution Control Agency. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, my name is Shannon Lothammer. I'm the manager of the water monitoring section at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and just wanted to provide a couple of comments. While the concept of star lakes and rivers is very positive, we do have some concerns about the proposal to fund the development of watershed management plans for lakes and streams, and the potential for this effort to pull agency staff away from implementing the watershed approach that we've been starting on and achieving the goals of the 10-year cycle that have been set by the legislature under the Clean Water Legacy Act. The development of the plans for individual lakes or rivers reaches would pull existing staff away from the watershed approach, because in the face of budget reductions, we're concerned about the time that this would take and the fact that there aren't resources built into this particular proposal to provide for that agency staff time. As we've testified in the past, we are implementing a watershed approach to monitoring and managing the state's lakes and streams and developing strategies for both protection and restoration. And we're very supportive of the citizen engagement piece of that, both for the monitoring side and then also for developing those management strategies. So just wanted to give those particular comments and note that we do have some concerns about what this might do from a staffing standpoint, but we're very supportive of the Star Lakes and Rivers concept.
I am missing something here. You're telling us that you're working on a watershed basis in your TMDLs. I understand that, and that's good. But the problems are going to be solved on smaller bases than the watershed. And what Representative Purcell is talking about are the smaller units within the watershed. So how did PCA intend to work on those smaller units within the watershed?
Madam Chair, what we're looking to do is take that major watershed by major watershed approach and then kind of basically group up all of the work within that watershed in that overall strategy. So we're very interested in engaging citizens and engaging groups in that overall process, but hoping to do that in a more efficient way by doing that kind of at that major watershed level. Because of the number of resources that we do need to do that management work for, we're looking for those efficiency gains through that through that watershed approach.
Madam Chair, if I might interject, I think that perhaps there's a little bit, we might be talking past each other here. This is intended to be lake specific, and when it talks about watershed, it's the watershed within that lake, that particular lake associations are working with, and to design pollution prevention measures for a specific lake watershed. And these are things that aren't going to be done at the larger 5 or 7 code watershed level. So I think that there's a difference there, and this is engaging at a smaller level, and certainly will contribute, but I think enhance, and as opposed to pull staff away, I believe it will enhance your efforts. That's my assessment of this, and having worked with a number of lake associations over the years, and having developed lake management plans that are prescriptive, and the blueprints are there. It's this simple stuff, actually. We just have to start doing these TMDLs in a preventive way, as opposed to doing them after the lakes are polluted, and that's what this is intended to do.
I'm still a little not understanding the Pollution Control Agency's plan after it develops a watershed plan to get the job done, because it does seem that it's got to be done on a smaller level than at this just one big watershed level. So help us as the committee, because this is what we're going to be looking at going forward. Help us understand what your intention is here.
Sure. Madam Chair, basically what occurs with those watershed plans is they include specific strategies for protecting waters where they're not impaired and then restoring waters where they are impaired and where a total maximum daily load study has been done. And those implementation activities are done at kind of the individual site level, and that's funded through the existing grant and funding programs that are available with Clean Water Fund dollars and other funding sources. I do want to make the point that we're very supportive of the whole concept of restoring and protecting lakes and streams, and also working with citizens to do that. It's something that we're already doing through both our Clean Water Partnership Program and also through the watershed approach that we're in the process of implementing. Really, our concern is just about the resource question and having an additional program that would require resources services that aren't being provided for in order to work with the groups and make sure that we're ensuring those good outcomes. We're just concerned about getting spread too thin and not being able to accomplish all of the goals that have been set out.
So you're saying you want a cut of this money? Is that it?
Madam Chair, what I'm saying is that if the responsibility is going to the Pollution Control Agency to ensure the outcomes, that we need some resources to be able to make sure that that happens and also accomplish our other work.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, if PCA staff is redirected to this project, what other projects would suffer or be affected that you're working on currently?
Madam Chair and Representative, we haven't had the opportunity to do that analysis yet, but we could provide that information.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, if I may, I started to take issue with what's been presented by MPCA, and I'm going to take further issue at this time. I believe this will enhance PCA's efforts, simply because they're working with lake associations already. Many of the lake associations that are part of this Star Lake project and that will be part of the Star Lake project have worked with MPCA. They've been doing Carlson Trophic State Index, if you're familiar with that, for years, for decades, some of them. And they're ready to move beyond. And MPCA is ready to move beyond, I believe, beyond doing a Carlson, knowing what the Trophic State Deer Lake is. Year after year after year after year, and then when it gets polluted, then you know you got a polluted Tropic State. So we're going to move to being preventive, prescriptive with a management plan, and I believe that's what's going on with MPCA right now, and I honestly believe this will enhance EPA or MPCA's efforts.
Madam Chair, to that point. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point then, do we need specific legislation? If the PCA is already moving in that direction to address this, do we need specific language that would identify this one specific project?
I think there are, Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I guess I might defer to others who may know more about the legal process on that, but my understanding would be no. I think that language is in here for directing that we're going to have Star Lake board, Star Lake proposals, and working towards management.
Okay, Representative Portman's were you
finished? Madam Chair, if I could get a member from the PCA to comment on that question as well. Do you need specific language to work on this project?
Madam Chair and Representative, all of the concepts that are in this particular bill are things that we are currently working towards under the Clean Water Legacy Act and with other programs that we have in play.
Thank you.
Representative Portman and then Representative Hackworth.
Thanks. Mine is just a quick question to Representative Purcell, and I'm wondering if you know whether the Star Lake Board is working with the local watershed district authority and if there's just one watershed in the area or if there's more than one watershed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Portman, my understanding of what has transpired since this the inception of Star Lake Board is that there are a number of lake associations working with their individual, within their individual lake watersheds. And this can be broadened to the scope, I think, that MPCA is envisioning here. But I'm not aware. I'm not going to tell you something I don't know, that they're working at a larger level at this time.
Thank you. And Representative Hackworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Purcell, I think your predecessor put this in place, put $100,000 to create this new Star Lake Board. And I think there was some legislation last year to put money towards Star Lake Board, and the governor vetoed it. Is this any different from the legislation that was around last year? Is there any kind of a – what makes you think that this is going to prevail and the governor's not going to veto this time? Is it any different, or is it the same, or what the scoop?
Madam Chair, Representative Hackbart, I'm beyond predicting what the governor's going to do, I mind you, but I know we've changed some language here. we've changed language to make this as outcome-based as we possibly can in a prescriptive manner, that we're going to protect lakes, and as opposed to waiting with the, you know the TMDL process, as opposed to waiting till the lake is impaired, and we need a TMDL to fix it, we're going to use the TMDL process to keep the lake clean.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Purcell, I don't know that that solves the problem. From what I understand, the project was a pilot program. We put $100,000 towards it to get it going, up and running, a new board, and then they were going to be self-sustaining after that, and I thought that's what was going to happen with this new board, and they were going to take care of funding themselves. So now here we are asking for more state money to keep running the board and operating. So I guess I don't see any real difference from what the legislation was last year, and I'm a little bit concerned that, you know, the governor's probably going to veto this too.
Madam Chair, Representative Heckmarth, I guess I haven't seen the self-sustaining part of that language, but...
Madam Chair and Representative Purcell, I guess that's how it was sold to us, created the board, from your process.
Well, maybe he was a good salesman. I'm not clear on that, but I can only speak to what I have here in front of me, Representative Heckmarth, and we believe this is good long-term. We save ourselves money by not making our backyard dirty, and that's what this is about.
We're going to have one more question, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to follow up on Representative Hackbart's point. Representative Purcell, Representative Moe absolutely sold this, that we put some one-time money in this, and this was not going to be back here for money. I questioned it at the time if this was a priority. Lake associations can do this kind of stuff. And it was no. It was sold that it was not going to be money. Madam Chair, if we're going to vote on this, I'd like a roll call.
Before you got here, Representative McNamara, I explained the protocol for today. We are laying things over for possible inclusion in a water bill. And that's what I'm going to do right now, is to... move that House file. I'm just going to lay over 3250-53 for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up is Representative Hansen, House File 3169. Now. Welcome to the committee, and I think members have. Did this just get passed out? Okay. Representative Anderson's amendment to yours, so we will follow the same protocol here. Let's. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I've moved House File 3169 for laid over for possible inclusion in this bill. And then I do have a small technical amendment that staff has recommended. I'd like to move an amendment, oral amendment, on line 1.5 after 750,000. Insert the words in fiscal year 2011.
Members, do you understand that amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The amendment's adopted. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 3169 is a bill relating to Thompson Lake, and if anyone on the committee or in the audience would like to come visit Thompson Lake, it's very close, about 5 minutes away up off of Butler and Highway 52 in West St. Paul. And I have several testifiers that are going to be here. Maybe if Al Singer could come forward. There has been a collaborative evaluation that has been done with Thompson Lake. You're going to be receiving a number of printed materials. Thompson Lake is a small lake in West St. Paul. in an urbanized area that has had an evaluation done on it and has involved the Pollution Control Agency, Dakota County, Dakota County Soil and Water Conservation District, the City of West St. Paul, and St. Croix Lutheran High School. And I have folks here today from the county, from the city, and from St. Croix Lutheran. Al Singer is with Dakota County and has worked with some of the materials, and he is going to walk through the color slide presentation, the hard copy of that. He's going to do that very quickly, but I think it's important to look at. This is an urbanized area lake. It has changed over the past 60 to 70 years as development has encroached around the lake. And the effects of that development over time have resulted in the lake being dramatically changed. This lake is up on the bluff, but it drains down through Simon's Ravine to the Mississippi River. And one of the areas of concern is with coal tar. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Singer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us the time to talk about the story of Thompson Lake. As Representative Hansen mentioned, I'm the Land Conservation Manager for Dakota County.
Excuse me, would you just identify yourself for the record?
My name is Al Singer. I'm the Land Conservation Manager for Dakota County, and I'm here on behalf of the number of partners that Representative Hansen described. You have before you a handout to help us understand a little bit of the story of Thompson Lake. And the story of Thompson Lake is not unique among the metro region. And we thought that this would be really helpful as we walk through the steps of how we got to where we are, and most importantly, what we're proposing. As Representative Hansen mentioned, this is in the city of West St. Paul, right on the border of West St. Paul and South St. Paul. You'll note on the old historic map of 1896 that jurisdictional boundaries did not recognize lakes. They were nice straight lines, but the property owner to the west is where the name Thompson Lake came from. You're also very familiar with the concept of natural watersheds. And the idea is that most of the precipitation either evaporates or infiltrates into the ground. If you look on page 3 of the handout, you'll notice that even in 1945, within 5 minutes of the Capitol, that most of the area around Thompson Lake was still undeveloped. It was actually still used primarily for farming. There was a large wetland to the west, and you can still see evidence of agriculture, primarily truck farms. You also know that in a natural watershed, most of the runoff infiltrates into the ground, and so you don't have to really worry about stormwater management. We know from science that once the watershed becomes 10 to 15% impervious, we then need to begin to manage that stormwater because the natural processes do not work as well. So let's fast forward to 2009 on the bottom of page 4. You see the outline of the sub-watershed. The sub-watershed is 175 acres and approximately 60% of it is now impervious. With that imperviousness, we have much more runoff and less infiltration. If we go to page 5, it's taken a while for regulations to catch up with this. The Clean Water Act really focused on point source pollution. The amendment began to focus on non-point pollution, and then there were several iterations to talk about smaller watersheds and the kinds of things that we're dealing with today. And relatively recently, it's been 2005 when the statutes that were put in place to regulate stormwater that cities and other local units have to abide by. Over that time, many things have accumulated in Thompson Lake. If you look at the aerial photograph in 1945, you see that wetland is still there on the west side of the lake. You see that there was a natural inlet on the north. You see that there was an outlet on the south, and basically the lake was still functioning in a natural way. Water was flowing through the lake. You also noticed that there was a beach there. This was a very popular activity for the residents that didn't have many opportunities to go elsewhere, to go up north, to go to the lake cabin. And so the picture in 1944 shows a lot of people enjoying the swimming qualities of Thompson Lake. So again, let's fast forward to 2008. The lake has now become essentially a large stormwater basin. Notice that the wetland to the west of the lake has been filled in with what was then a Catholic high school that is now the site of St. Croix Lutheran. You'll also notice a dock. You'll also notice a building to the southeast. That's the combined Dakota Lodge West St. Paul City Center, or Senior Center. So the city and the county have been working a long time in collaboration. St. Croix Lutheran moved to the site in 1992. They have about 450 students, grades 6 through 12, including 90 international students. If you go to page 8, the list of contaminants that have been found in the lake are not unusual and not atypical of urban systems. The one piece that I would point out is the last one, which is the driveway sealant that the legislature addressed in 2009. You'll also notice that there was a sediment delta that began to form in early 2000, and it's continued to grow ever since. So that stormwater that's coming into the lake is picking up sand and other things throughout the sub-watershed, and it's depositing it into a growing delta on the north side of the lake. So the city and the county and others worked together on updating the master plan for Thompson County Park in 2005. You'll note that beyond some of the typical projects that are included in a park master plan, water quality was a significant component, including the development of a stormwater pond on the north side of the lake. In 2008, the city and the county began implementing this plan, and it began with realigning a road to provide a safe entrance to the park. At that time, plans were in place for the city also to begin excavating a small pond on the north to intercept some of that stormwater. You'll note on the bottom of page 10, this is what the design looked like. There was a small wetland that would be created on the north. That's that green and red area. Then there would be a dike that was created to the south. That would allow the loop trail to continue around the lake. So we began working on that, and just like good plans, you have to have good data, and so we began doing the testing. When we tested the sediments of where the stormwater pond would be located, we found out that there were a number of hazardous materials, including PAHs, or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are one of the most toxic contaminants that is known, and one of the most widespread. In any event, the initial project was to create this small basin to intercept some of the stormwater at a cost of about $500,000, with full recognition that this did not address contamination throughout the lake and it did not address issues within the whole sub-watershed. As we began doing more testing, we found out that the sediment delta actually had more contamination in. And it was accumulating all of these PAHs that were basically coming from out the sub-watershed and sticking to the sand and floating in the water. And we estimated that that delta over time had grown to about 5,450 cubic yards. Initially, when the cost estimates were made, we thought that the sediments could be landfilled, but because of the contaminants, they're actually considered hazardous waste now. So many of those stormwater basins that have been in use for the past 30 years, knowing that their life cycle is about 30 years, those sediments that are going to have to be removed from those stormwater basins cannot be treated as typical solid waste. they're actually going to have to be landfilled as hazardous solid waste. We then took sediment cores throughout the lake to see how widespread this was. And you'll notice that bucket on the one picture, the sediment smells like petroleum, it looks like petroleum, it feels like petroleum. This is what's found throughout the bottom of Thompson Lake. We also did some water quality testing. We found a number of things that are listed on page 12, including bacteria and copper and arsenic, as well as the low levels of these PAHs. We mentioned a little bit about the PAHs. It's a known carcinogen. Depending on its type, and I'm not a chemist, it can be non-toxic to very toxic. It can bioaccumulate in organisms. And so those organisms that are living in the lake over a period of time can actually begin accumulating that in the system, and it becomes part of the food system. As a result of all of this, the partners then began to redesign the project. The stormwater basin is much larger. It's to take all of that stormwater that's coming into the lake, but it also is dealing with removing that sediment basin, that contaminated sediment basin, so it continues to not keep adding to the problems in Thompson Lake. You'll notice on page 14 that the project has changed in terms of its scope and also its cost, primarily because of the removal of those sediments and the cost of hauling it and disposing it because of its hazardous nature. So here we have a situation that we have a county park used by approximately 90,000 people. South St. Paul and West St. Paul and the county are looking at this park, as well as the adjacent park, could become a regional park. It's the focus of a lot of people and a lot of past and projected investment. The partners are trying to take a proactive, comprehensive approach that not just deals with this lake, but also deals with the sub-watershed issues, including the development and implementation of a citywide ordinance that would prevent coal tar from being used in the city of West St. Paul. It leverages lots of resources. We have a plan in place. We have the science behind us that of which that plan is based upon. And interestingly, this project is not eligible for current funding. It falls in sort of that gap because it's not a stormwater basin, which is eligible for some of the pilot funding. It is also not an impaired water because it does not have the official 2 years of testing that puts it on the list and then makes it available for future funding. We know that there's a problem right now. And so the partners are requesting that the House and the Senate provide up to $750,000 to match existing resources as a potential model of how we can be proactive, involve partners that goes well beyond just cleaning up a local lake. We think that we're trying to be out front. Dakota County has a long history of being proactive in this area. We have lots of credibility, and I think with the partnership, we could provide real value to many other municipalities and local officials.
Thank you for that. We are going to have additional testimony on coal tar, so I hope we can hold those questions until we get to Representative Scalzi's testifiers, because I think lots of the questions will be answered by her testifiers. So I just want to wait on that. Do you have any other questions besides that for the witness or Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to bring to the committee's attention that it appears that the lake was much cleaner when we were actually farming around it before the development took place. So I just wanted to raise that.
Representative Hansen, do you have additional testifiers?
Madam Chair, I know that we have the city and the county. I would like them to just acknowledge that they're here and they support it, because I want to be cognizant of time. But I do have someone from St. Croix Lutheran citizen who did make a trip, and if I could just maybe have him come forward, or if he'd want to just, since he did come in, just to state their support. And I don't know if the committee knows, but Representative McNamara is familiar with the site. That was the old Brady High School. If I could, just since he's made the trip.
Hello, my name is Gene Pfeiffer. I'm the head of school at St. Croix Lutheran High School. Thank you for this opportunity. I think for St. Croix Lutheran, this issue began as a simple financial issue. We were concerned about our stormwater assessment fee because we have about a 30-acre campus, and a lot of impervious soil and a lot of stormwater was running off into Lake Thompson. So we, over time, realized that the issue wasn't so much about a financial thing for St. Croix, but really it became an educational issue for our governing board and especially for our students, where now we realize that we're part of the problem. And while we own a portion of this lake, and we are willing to sell that portion, what we are interested in doing is to take that entire amount that we might gain in a land acquisition fees, to turn right around and implement rain gardens, redo our parking lot so that we can retain our stormwater on our property. We've had an environmental engineering firm come and talk about how we can do that sort of a project to help be part of the solution. So that's something that St. Croix has grown over the past couple of years to realize that we're an important player, and we want our students to also be a big part of that. So we wrote a grant to do some help with the water testing and also to do some type of a community awareness project so that the citizens of West St. Paul realize that this coal tar that's contributing to the problem is something that we can control and stop.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to just treat yours as a separate bill. I don't see any other question, members. Representative Ferguson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hansen, could you describe the funding mechanism you're proposing here, where these monies are coming from?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, this would be from the Clean Water Fund.
And that is the 3/8.
That's from the constitutional dollars.
Madam Chair, I have a question of process. We have approximately 15,000 lakes in Minnesota. And many of them have issues that require protection and cleanup. And it's just, my question is, do we intend to bring each of those lakes before this committee, evaluate them, and decide whether or not to fund their projects? If so, we're going to have to extend the length of the session dramatically.
Representative Torkelson, in the last clean water bill that we recommended to Representative Murphy's committee and that they adopted, we had two competitive pots of money that this lake and perhaps Representative Anderson's lake would be eligible for. And it's those pots of money that we're going to be talking about. One of them went to Bowser, and we heard about what they did with their competitive grants. And one of them was for specifically for stormwater type things in watersheds. And it seems to me that this particular project fits that category. And that's something we will discuss as a committee. The other category that we had for competitive grants were for remediation from coal tar. And that's the question I wanted you to hold off on until Representative Scalzi has her testimony. But you can remember that was another pot of money, again, competitive. So I think that's the issue we're looking at, these pots of money for competitive grants.
So, Madam Chair, then it's your intention that we review these competitive grants at this committee and award them through this committee?
No, it's my intention that we look at the amounts that go into those pots of money and perhaps increase them.
So, Madam Chair, are you speaking against adopting this bill? It seems that this bill would be a direct award of funds from that pot of money.
This is a discussion this committee will have, but I'm telling you how we handled it last year and what we have sitting here in a bill that I will have before you are some appropriations to Bowser, and Representative Scalzi has one with an appropriation for coal tar, and the question will be, do we add additional money to those pots?
Madam Chair, the coal tar issue is not one for my district because we have lots of agriculture and we avoid that problem, as Representative Hamilton pointed out. But the question of the process here is one, you know, that I have in mind. And, you know, I have lake associations in my district. Should I be contacting them and having them put presentations together to come before this committee in the near future?
You're welcome to do that, particularly if they have good science and they've documented their problems and that this committee can learn from that documentation of what needs to be done to take care of lakes. I think this is extremely educational, and I appreciate these folks coming forward and helping us understand what's involved in cleaning up some of these lakes. So for that in particular, and Dakota County does have an excellent reputation for dealing with water issues. So I'm glad they were here to help us out understanding the big picture problem, because you're right, urban lakes and rural lakes may be different, though in some towns in rural Minnesota, I think we're going to probably see a coal tar problem too.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, having sat on this committee for a while, I don't think we've seen a presentation that has what has happened here. I mean, we've heard about coal tar, but this shows what happens as we have suburbanizing areas over time, the effect of development on them. We have a background of, this is not, let's start a project. This isn't, we have a lake that we'd like to fix. This is folks that have been doing a lot of background, a lot of science. It's a collaborative process, but it doesn't fit in to the TMDL process. This is new science. This is a problem that's here, and it isn't going to be just Thompson Lake. Other lakes, if they start looking beneath the surface, are going to see the same thing. And so part of the reason for having us here is to make awareness as we move through these issues. And I think it is perfectly legitimate to protect, restore, and enhance our rivers, lakes, and streams for these funds to be used for projects like this.
We're going to have one more question, and then I want to hear from Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just more of a comment here, and a little bit of a response to Representative Hamilton here. And I'm going to preface it by saying I grew up in farm country, and I think every farmer I knew was a good steward of land, so I have no reason to believe any different. But I'm going to refer you to page 3 of this handout, and where it says pre-development, and that seems a bit incongruous looking at all the development there. But pre-development 1945, and you see the watershed for Thompson Lake, and you see the ag area they identified is not in it. I just wanted to make sure you're aware of that.
The
watershed I see is this yellow line around the lake. In the ag area, I see agriculture. See that?
And Madam Chair, on page 7, I see all the people swimming in the lake from 1940 to 1950, you know, back when we were predominantly farmland in that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My only point is that it looks to me like it's not. I don't want to, not trying to pick a fight, but I'm looking at the data that's presented in front of me here.
Thank you for the questions. We are going to lay this over, but first we're going to hear from Representative Anderson. Last question. Representative Torkelson, or you have one more comment on this?
Well, it's just a comment regarding the yellow line on this map. when I look at it, the yellow line looks like it virtually crosses the lake, so I would suggest that perhaps the science behind that yellow line might not be adequate.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, I've got an amendment to this bill, and I'd like to move that at this time, unless you wanted to take up my House file instead, and we can move the House file that I have that contains my language. What would you prefer to do, Madam Chair?
Well, we didn't notice it, and that is the problem.
Okay. Well, then I'll move Amendment A1 to House File 3169. And, Madam Chair, I do have some folks here that can speak to this, if that's all right with you.
Yes, I hadn't counted on this time-wise, so I'm going to tell you, members, and we definitely, I'm going to ask Representative Hansen if he can hold off on his inflow and infiltration bill, and I'm, because I think there is more depth of testimony here than people need to hear, so. We will hear from your folks, and on my bill, I'm going to hold open enough time for the one person who signed up to testify, and we'll do that on Thursday. Okay? But if...
If I'm happy with that.
Okay. If that works for everybody? Is that it? Okay. You've moved an amendment to A1 to House File 3169, and you'd like to have testifiers, and we'll have those testifiers now.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence on this. I brought with me today Jamie Page. He is one of the homeowners on the Lake Association around Schmidt Lake. And they brought forward this problem to me here this summer. And as you heard in committee today, this is a problem that's not just unique to St. Paul. It's across the state. And I've been working with other lawmakers across the state that are having similar problems. And I asked Jamie today to be brief because I realized that time is short. But I think it would be best for him to describe what the situation is with Schmidt Lake. Though I can say to you that listening to the testimony for the Thompson Lake was just like hearing with the same problems that we're experiencing in Schmidt Lake. So I think they did the bulk of the work for us in testifying with the problems that happens with stormwater runoff. But Jamie, if you could speak, please.
Hi, my name is James Page. I live in Plymouth, Minnesota. I'm a resident on Schmidt Lake. Our story is very similar to Thompson Lake. I've lived on the lake for about 6 years, and we have 92 different storm sewers that ultimately end up unfiltered into Schmidt Lake through 7 different storm sewers, and it is literally filling up the lake. And when we passed the Clean Water Act, it just made sense to me to try to raise the visibility of this as a lakeshore owner. So how do we take care of this for Schmidt Lake as well as the lakes around Minnesota? Because it's certainly one of the most valuable environmental gems that Minnesota has, and I just hate to see those lakes continue to fill. So I have lots of data. We have a very active lake association, very active. We're a pilot for a number of different DNR programs, and we've had some great success, but I'll keep it short.
And Madam Chair, they have done extensive work as a lake association to improve the quality of the lake overall. They have done scientific studies. They have all that data, but out of courtesy to you, we don't want to take up too much of your time.
I would like to know if you have tested for PAHs.
If I have, I'm sorry?
If your lake association has, this is the issue in Thompson Lake. PAHs, and I'm wondering if you have, because we're going to hear some testimony on that very, very shortly, and I hope you stay for that testimony.
We're a volunteer organization, so honestly, I'm not a scientist by any means, but we did intuitively several years ago start collecting data. We've got sediment levels throughout our lake. We've got clarity. We've got weed charts. We did take the sediment soil samples, and we took them off to a lab, and we had them burned and evaluated a couple, 2 or 3 years ago. Intuitively, we did that, and we found out at this point it's not contaminated soil.
Madam Chair, if we could at some point, it would be wonderful if we had some time set aside for this topic in particular. This was very short notice. Jamie and I were communicating at 10 o'clock last night to get him here. He's rearranged his schedule to make this happen. And he's actually not the individual that's responsible for collecting all the data. Their Lake Association president would have all of those materials and would be able to provide you with all of that information.
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that might be interesting for you and the committee to look to see about the PAHs, because that's the testimony I want us to move into right now. Do you have any other comments?
Yeah. Can we have one other person just make his comments, please? Thank you.
My name is Stu Freilich. I'm a 15-year resident of Minnesota and 15-year resident of Schmidt Lake. I just want to second Jamie's comments and thank Representative Anderson for her work. To us, it's a little bit ironic that some of the public measures that have been taken to open up the lake for the recreational use, in particular the boat access that was formed in 2003 during street repaving around the lake, have become a source not only of many additional people enjoying the lake, but also a source of intrusion of silt and soil, in effect dumping into the lake. As Jamie has mentioned and Representative Anderson has mentioned, we've done many innovative things in the time that I've been on the lake. I was association president for 2 years in the previous decade. And we've been working for a long time on various aspects of sampling and science of the lake, and working with responsible professionals to work on exotics, particularly curlew and Eurasian milfoil, but also in recent years, innovative biological treatments to get away from the old copper sulfate treatments for algae. And now we're working on an innovative program for aeration of the lake to get away from the overall usage of chemicals to control the water quality and enhance it. I think we've been very successful in this time, but on a matter such as this, where in effect public works are having the side effect of dumping into the lake, this is somewhat beyond the scope of what we can deal with as an association. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, did you want to vote on the amendment?
We will vote on the amendment right now.
Okay.
But
thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo the comments made by Representative Torkelson earlier, because I would agree with him, and the approach that we took last year is that a competitive grant program where professionals who are experienced in hydrology make the decisions about which projects have the most potential at the lowest cost to improve water quality. And I think it's instructive for us to have these specific examples so we know, like you said, how big to make the fund and what the type of project. But I do think that the individual decisions have to be made by professionals, because I would agree with Representative Torkelson. Otherwise, we would be here for a long time wading through different proposals very similar to each of these.
All right. With that, I will just remind you the reason we want to get to Representative Scalzi so quickly is because that is a pot of money that is a competitive grant. And the question is, does that pot of money need to be larger? So that's the basic question we're moving to here. Representative Anderson moves Amendment A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition?
Yes.
The amendment is adopted, and the 3169 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As amended. Representative Scalzi, I've been anxious to get to you. People can tell that, because I think we're going to get some of the science that we need to have to move forward here. And thank you for working on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My bill is House File 3633, and it relates to coal tar. It's a proposed modification to the by the PCA to the 2009 Clean Water Fund budget, and it is related to the cleanup of potential coal tar contamination. And just for a little bit of background, I don't think that the previous testifier explained this, but there's two types of seal coatings, and we discussed this a little bit last year. there's two types of seal coatings that you can apply to your asphalt driveway. One is based on asphalt, and one is based on a coal tar. And there's been many studies. There's some ordinances around the country that have done scientific studies on the runoff of that coal tar. The asphalt problem does not seem to be a problem if you use the asphalt seal coating on your driveways and parking lots. But with the coal tar-based seal coating, it flakes off, it runs off, and it creates a hydrocarbon in the sediment, and that's the PAH that we're talking about. It's a probable carcinogen, and it's been found to create tumors in fish that are in the waters that has been polluted by coal tar. We have two testifiers here today. One is Lisa Thorvig, who's from the PCA, who has an amendment to our last year's bill to move some money because they want to do some more studies. And then I also have here with me Mark Sather, the city manager of White Bear Lake, which is one of the cities that's been highlighted on the news and in the newspapers because they had a pond in the city of White Bear Lake that they attempted to dredge, and it was found to be contaminated, and they were unable to spread this dredge material on ground unless it was a lined landfill. So that sort of sets out the problem just a little bit. And with that, I think we'll go to the first part of the reason we're here. House File 3633 is for Lisa Thorvig from the PCA.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Thorvig, Division Director of the Municipal Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you. We handed out a fact sheet from our agency on the coal tar legislation that was adopted in 2009. As Representative Scalzi said, coal tar-based sealant is widely used to recondition asphalt surfaces, but there are environmental concerns with its use. And the 2009 legislation that addressed coal tar sealants had a number of provisions. One was to restrict state agencies from purchasing undiluted coal tar sealants, and that goes into effect in July of this year. There was also a request to do additional research on the testing and treatment and removal and disposal technologies associated with stormwater pond sediments that are contaminated with these PAH compounds from coal tar sealants. The agency has made good progress in implementing the requirements of the legislation. Some additional work will aid us further in developing technologies for the treatment and the appropriate disposal. And so this request is a request to allocate some additional funds for continued research in fiscal year 11. As you can see in the handout in the background, the legislation provided the agency with $155,000 in fiscal year 10 to notify state and local governments to develop a stormwater inventory schedule for our regulated municipal stormwater permittees, and to develop best management practices for treating and cleaning up contaminated sediments. Then in fiscal year 11, $345,000 was appropriated to the agency to develop a model ordinance for the restricted use of undiluted coal tar sealants and to provide grants to local units of government that enact a coal tar ordinance to implement that enact a coal tar ordinance to ban the use of coal tar sealants and to implement best management practices for treating or cleaning up the sediments. The grant awards cannot exceed $100,000 per the legislation, and it's a 50% grant. It needs to be matched with an additional 50% from the local units of government. And currently, the only city we're aware of that's actually developing the ordinance that would then qualify them for this grant is the city of White Bear Lake. Some of the activities that the agency has completed to date under the 2009 legislation is we have notified state agencies of the prohibition on the coal tar sealant, and that went out in January. Again, the date for implementation of that ban is July. The Minnesota Department of Transportation is the largest user of sealant, and they already use only asphalt-based sealant, so we know that there is alternatives out there. We've also begun to notify local units of government on what the state is doing. It wasn't a requirement that they not use it. It was just to provide information. So we've done that through the Department of Administration, and we need to do additional news releases in newsletters from the cities and counties and townships, and we're preparing to do that. Municipal stormwater permittees were informed of the stormwater pond inventory requirements and schedule, and they will be required to submit their pond inventory in their permit application due in June of 2011. The PCA has worked closely with the League of Minnesota Cities to draft a model ordinance for local restrictions on coal tar sealants that is available to all local units of government, and that's posted both on the League of Minnesota Cities website as well as the Pollution Control Agency's website. The PCA, the bulk of the $155,000 went into monitoring and testing contaminated sediments. And we completed a survey sampling of stormwater sediments in October, and the laboratory data is currently being evaluated. One of the things that we looked at was a grant to University of Minnesota to see if we can utilize the contaminated sediments with yard waste compost as a treatment methodology. And the bench scale testing so far is looking very promising. The results of that bench scale testing will be completed in June. And if that continues to be a promising alternative, that's one of the things we want to do with the additional money is go into a field scale testing of the use of this contaminated coal tar with yard waste as a treatment method, so there isn't the very expensive hazardous waste disposal of these coal tar sediments. Some of the remaining needs, and I'm really going to just focus on the last bullet on the second page, because we are completing up reports. We will be modifying our guidance to cities on the use of how to test and treat and dispose of coal tar, and that's what some of these other bullets are. But the additional work that we're targeting, the $145,000, is to identify options for further managing the contaminated sediments and evaluating new methods to treat the PAH contamination. I mentioned the compost, the testing that's being done, and the movement out to field work. We also have different ideas on how to identify and evaluate BMPs that might be able to reduce concentration of PAHs picked up by stormwater. The coal tar sealants are not the only source of PAHs to our stormwater ponds, as well as identifying BMPs that may be effective at removing PAHs prior to those sediments being deposited in stormwater. So that's my testimony.
Do you want to continue with your other testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair, I was just going to say that was the part of the bill that we presented today. And so of that $345,000, there would be $200,000 remaining for cities to use if they adopt a model ordinance. And so Mark Sather is here from the City of White Bear Lake to let us know how they're progressing with their problem and their model ordinance.
And we really appreciate your coming to hear the real on-the-ground work. Thank you for coming.
Madam Chair, my name is Mark Sather. I'm City Manager of White Bear Lake. I've worked there for 26 years. I've worked in two other Minnesota cities over the course of the last 35 years. Every one of them has had stormwater problems. They all had stormwater detention and retention ponds, and they fill up. And that's been a challenge with cities long before a lot of the regulation that has caused closer focus on them. In order to just enhance the water flow through those basins as well as their holding capacity and flood prevention capacity, we've had to do periodic maintenance and excavation, very similar to a rural ditch. You can't just build it and leave it. You have to maintain it. Until recently, we've had a pretty good program in place, and we took the soils that were excavated from the ponds and spread them in low areas, even used them in parks and things of that nature, and relatively low cost. So the cost was the actual excavation and minor trucking. But more recently, we've had to undertake closer testing. Better testing methods have been come up, or have been developed, and more concern has been placed on the quality of those soils. And I just want to point out a couple of projects that will bring real dollars to your conversation. Our work in White Bear Lake is usually done in the winter, because a lot of our ponds, whether they were natural or man-made, now have houses around them, and access to them is very difficult. And so to minimize tearing up yards and so forth, we wait until the pond is frozen, the ground is frozen, we bring in equipment. We competitively bid that work. We had one pond about 6 acres that was excavated this past winter. Through competitive bids, we had a large number of contractors, qualified contractors with the right equipment, with interest in the project. We had to excavate about 1,800 cubic yards of sediment material out of that pond. And our total cost on that was about $27 per cubic yard. Because that sediment was not contaminated, it could simply be brought to a spoiled site and disposed of as we have traditionally. So that total project cost us approximately $50,000. That was paid for through the city stormwater pollution prevention program. We have a special fund where we set aside a certain amount of our levy each year for that purpose. The next project on our list was a larger lake. It's adjacent to our high school. It was a natural body of water that a lot of the area traditionally flowed through until it was developed, and then it flowed through at a greater velocity, carrying more sediment, and that needs to be excavated also. That has contaminated soils, and it requires special treatment. Our estimate on that at this point, because of further trucking that will be necessary, we have to handle that waste different. We have to truck it to a place that first off charges us $11 a cubic yard to accept it. And the extra trucking will just about double that cost. Our estimated cost for that project will be about $47 a cubic yard as compared to the 27 that we've had, almost $50,000, or $50 a cubic yard. And that's a pretty good sized project. And so actually the cost per cubic yard has come down on that. Another real figure that we got from the city of Shoreview that did a similar project, this one is a smaller project, they only excavated about 600 cubic yards. Their cost was $62 per cubic yard to have that sediment removed and brought to a proper landfill. So our problem is that it's just about double the cost, in some cases perhaps more than double the cost, to take the material to a special landfill. And as much as I'd like more money from the legislature to help us pick up that difference, I'm not asking, I don't think our community is expecting someone to do our duty, but where we've come up with a problem, particularly because of the PAHs, we have to handle that differently. And if we could get assistance in that area, it would be greatly appreciated. On the other hand, I think we also need further research. And in support of the agency's proposal, because we do believe in talking with some contractors that there may be alternatives to handling the soil rather than having to bring it to a specialized landfill. And again, it's the treatment cost or the handling cost, $11 per cubic yard, and having to truck it halfway across the state, that's an exaggeration, but certainly well out of our normal disposal area to have it treated just adds greatly to the cost where it could be done at a much less expensive basis. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that's the information I can offer.
I think there's real life examples of what's going on are very important. Representative McNamara, I know that Craig Johnson wants to testify on this. I'm going to leave 5 minutes at the end for someone who has come on my bill from out of town. I'm just moving mine to Thursday, which is fine, but I would like the person who came from out of town to be able to testify. So if you would, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sather, could you just say what are some of the alternatives that the contractors presented as opposed to bringing it to a special landfill?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I think some of them may or may not be accepted by under the normal or under the existing regulations, such as just land farming, spreading it out and disking into the soil. Others mixing it with compost. We understand, at least we've heard contractors arguing that is used to somewhat neutralize other contaminants in sediment that's being collected through different processes. So I'm not the scientist here, but those are what's being brought up, and I would hope that there could be further research into the reliability of those.
Any other questions here, Craig Johnson? While he's coming up, I trust that as you are looking at composting, you are looking at residuals like lead, because that other things can be contaminated in composting as well. Craig Johnson is coming up.
And Madam Chair, and members of the committee, I did bring with me our sampling plan for the testing that we have done, and I didn't bring enough copies for everyone. I only brought a few, but it does show that we are sampling for metals, mercury, chloride, carcinogenic PAHs, total organic carbons, and then some of the emerging contaminants like PFCs and PVDEs and other things. So it's a very comprehensive testing suite that we're looking at in terms of these contaminated sediments and trying to develop cost-effective test methods so everybody doesn't have to do this suite of chemicals, and we've gotten very promising results on more cost-effective test and screening methods, and then coming up with treatment options so that it's less expensive to dispose of these in an environmentally sound manner.
If you could give a copy to the committee, we will have it in people's packets for Thursday. Mr. Johnson. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'll be very brief because you've gotten some good background on this between the earlier bill you heard and the testimony on this bill. The League of Minnesota Cities last year testified on a bill that would have dealt with banning coal tar sealants. And really, we had a shortage of information at that time to know exactly who it would impact and how much. I can report to you that in our discussions with city, both public works folks and elected and appointed officials over the interim, we found very few cities that use any coal tar sealants on public projects. They use asphalt sealants because that's what they're already using for all their transportation projects. The coal tar sealants are, if you see a really shiny black parking lot or driveway, that's probably a coal tar sealant. Issue, as you already heard, is that it flakes off, runs directly into stormwater, into rain gardens, into all kinds of stormwater containment areas, and the sediment becomes contaminated. The current law says that a city cannot receive state financing to help clean that up unless they have passed a local ordinance banning the sale and use of the product. I guess our conclusion as we look at the data that's coming in on this, and we may not have time to discuss that this session, but we certainly hope it's discussed next session, is that if we already know that this is such a problem material that we are going to require local bans before the state will even help clean up the contamination, maybe the state should be looking at whether this product should be being used at all, rather than forcing individual cities to face national interest groups coming in to meet with them on Friday afternoons, like some cities got to do, and others are going to. I would also add that we have found out that, as Mr. Sather pointed out, White Bear Lake is not alone. We have many cities that are finding that the soil in their stormwater ponds is contaminated. Most are just having to figure out how, within their existing budgets, to just do less maintenance on ponds and do, you know, pay the extra cost to do the ponds they can. We've seen some fallout from that. You've now heard Eden Prairie has 900 stormwater ponds that they have an order, but as of yesterday had to have a plan to clean out. If you take some of the numbers we've seen in other communities, you can guess what kind of cost that's going to have to that community in a very short time frame. You're going to hear more and more about this, and members, I really think that this is something that you're going to see as a very serious problem in the future that cities are going to have a very difficult time financing. Last thing I would add is thank you to Representative Scalzi, who's been working on this for the last 2 years. She does have a bill, House File 3456, that does provide for a statewide ban, but got introduced a little late this year thanks to the research we were doing to make sure it was a good bill. But it is mirrored by legislation that was introduced in the state of Michigan for a statewide ban there as well. Be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. We are going to move on thanking Representative Scalzi again for continuing with this. I changed our schedule, members, because we're going to lay over House File 3633. I changed our schedule, members, because this is one of those problems that is going like this. And we do have to deal with it, and we will. The bill that I introduced is House File 3502. I will wait to move it on Thursday, but I will just tell you briefly, it is looking at the possible addition of money to the coal tar money, and as well as funding the additional work needed at PCA. It has Bowser language in it, which would allow us to put additional money in the Bowser for competitive grants. It has a proposed money for continuing the work on nitrogen at PCA. And finally, it looks at groundwater, and in the 11 county metro area, in response to the groundwater study that was done by DNR, which was a strong study, and said that we needed monitoring in the metropolitan area. So we are looking in that bill at putting matching funds, a local match and a state match, to deal with that issue. And with that, Alan Peterson, who's president of the Irrigators Association, had asked to testify on that. We'd be glad to hear him testify. Just keep in mind that this is for Thursday, and I didn't want him to drive down here and then have to turn around and come back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to talk about House File 3502. My name is Alan Peterson. I live in Clear Lake, Minnesota. That's in Sherburne County. I have 700 irrigated acres in my farm. I'm also the Irrigators Association of Minnesota state president. I represent approximately 25 permitted irrigators in the state with approximately 600,000 irrigated acres. According to DNR's proposal of the costs of this bill, it would cost the average household 22 cents per year. It would cost the average 135-acre center pivot system $500 per year. For my farm, that would cost me an extra $1,120.
Can you just hold on for a minute? This only applies to the 11-county metro area.
Sherburne County falls under that 11-county metro area.
You are in Sherburne County.
I live in Sherburne County and farm there. As I said, for my farm, that would add $1,120 per year to my pumping fee cost. Of all the entities listed in DNR's cost proposal here, a farm is the only one that cannot pass this cost along. My question is, why don't we use the clean water money for the entire cost of this bill? The 3/8 of 1% sales and use tax increase that was passed a short time ago, that this would be a perfect example of what that money was intended to be used for. I thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak right here at the end, so I take any questions if there's any time.
I will tell you, in general, the 3/8 money is highly competitive. You'll just heard from other people who are also interested, and we've usually, as far as I know, we've always required matching funds. And so the proposal that I have is to provide a more than 50% match. So it is a matching fund. And so that the additional money is the local match. Any other questions for members? Yes, Representative Torkelson.
Just very quickly, thank you, Madam Chair, to the testifier. Can you describe the permit and permit fees that you pay currently?
Yes, the fee is a $140 minimum that is up to a 50 million gallons of water pumped per permit. So I pay, you know, on my farm I have 10 permits, active permits. I pay $1,400 for those. None of them pump over the 50 million gallons. And this would then add $8 per million gallons on top of that 140 million gallons.
Thank you.
And thank you for being willing to testify at the end. We just
thank you.
I think it was important for members to hear about this PAA problem, which is growing so fast. And Representative Anderson, I hope we can hear from your community if they tested for that. That let us know. That would be helpful. With that, we have minutes.
Yes, Madam Chair, we need to approve some minutes here. March 4th, March 8th, March 9th, and March 11th, 2010. I move approval.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Minutes are adopted. Thank you.